This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Over the summer, police arrested a young Ohio man who self-describes as an incel, or as involuntarily celibate, on accusations he was planning a mass shooting of women at college campuses. Trey Grinko had stockpiled weapons and ammunition he planned to use to carry out those shootings. That's according to law enforcement. He also frequented websites and chat rooms dedicated to the incel movement. But what was Grinko seeing on those sites? And did it drive him and others who have actually carried out similar acts to plan horrific violence against women? I spoke earlier about incel ideology and the Grinko case with George Washington University Program on Extremism research fellow Jonathan Lewis. Here is our recorded interview. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Good afternoon.
I think it's important that we start with a definition of an incel. I know it's a common internet term, and it's certainly on the radar of law enforcement, but for the general person, perhaps an explanation would be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, just generally speaking, the term incel refers to involuntary celibate, which essentially is individuals who self-identify for any range of reasons as feeling that women are unjustly denying them some kind of sexual or romantic attention that they think they are entitled to. Now, in the case that we're going to speak about today, just for kind of clarity here, I think it's important to distinguish between incel, which, as I said, is a very self-identifying term, right? You don't have to show proof of that. You don't have to sign up. It is just you say, I am an incel, and you go on your way. And I think the case we're talking about today and this kind of broader trend of offline violence, which is, you know, always going to be a concern of law enforcement and the government, really comes from male supremacy. And in this specific case, I think, you know, misogynist incel in the same way that you kind of have the construction of, you know, in the same way experts have kind of looked at racist skinhead as a really kind of constructed term. I think we should kind of similarly try and use misogynist incel to refer to kind of the individuals who take that sort of action in the name of male supremacy, right?
Well, that's something I wanted to ask you was some of the crossover attributes that seem to be thematic within the incel community, if it's right to call it a community. Mm-hmm. As part of your research in the program that you're part of at George Washington, you studied the evolution of white supremacist and anti-government movements. Is there overlap either in the ideologies and or the behaviors?
Yes, absolutely. In both. I think obviously, as you said, I think community is a great term for it. You know, in no means is it any kind of cohesive or coherent movement or group or organization. You know, very, very loosely kind of constructed community, largely online, is really the perfect way to kind of situate that. In terms of, you know, any kind of relationship and crossover, the first thing I would say is that any ideology rooted in supremacy, again, whether it's white supremacy, whether it's male supremacy, is going to have crossover. There's going to be a certain kind of agreement on a number of kind of basic issues, right? If you look at the neo-Nazi white supremacist space, they are very, very kind of keen to promote this idea of tradition and traditional gender roles. And, you know, trad wife is a very common term used by the white supremacist space. And I think a lot of those ideas and a lot of the viewpoints do have a lot of crossover. And again, I think it's important to note that while the incel or misogynist incel space is non-contiguous, there are a lot of very racist, anti-Semitic undertones to a lot of their online communications, both on mainstream platforms like Twitter, or in some of these kind of closed off community, you know, internal spaces where they communicate. And I think the broader concern here in the kind of longer term is that we have seen concerted efforts by white supremacists, by neo-Nazis to attempt to recruit from these spaces. And we have certainly seen a lot of, you know, peer-to-peer, person-to-person crossover from, you know, misogynist incel spaces online into, you know, harder neo-Nazi white supremacist spaces, be it Telegram or elsewhere.
When we think about where these feelings that these men have come from, what do we know? I mean, how does someone begin to identify as incel or involuntarily celibate?
Yeah, I think that's a very, you know, individualized kind of pathway. And I think in the cases that we have seen, and again, I think it's important to note that, you know, at the Program on Extremism and other kind of research spaces, a lot of the analysis is dedicated to individuals who have either, you know, committed an act or are alleged or, you know, charged federally or at the state level with committing an act. So, you know, we're looking at a lot of, you know, if you're looking at zeros and ones, it's a lot of ones, right, in those cases. But what we've seen is really a very quick kind of flash to bang to get to the point from individual being in these online spaces, feeling kind of whether it's isolated, whether it's feeling like, and again, I think it's important to note here that, you know, these are their own personal grievances that are, you know, both, you know, perceived and otherwise. And there's obviously a lot of important context that we need to place within these statements and what they're saying about their kind of male right over a woman's body. And I think that that's really what's implicit to a lot of these individual cases is if you look at their own rhetoric, they seem to think that just, you know, by nature of their gender, they are kind of, you know, there is a right that they have to have women give them sexual and romantic attention. And I think it's important to note that it's not just these individuals feel lonely or they feel disconnected from society. It's they feel that, again, like they have some right just by nature of their gender to have this thing and it's not being given to them. And they need to act on that kind of feeling of unjust removal of what they deserve.
That's what I wanted to get into a little bit more, because this isn't that image that we might have in our minds in American culture of the lonely guy in his parents' basement who can't find a girlfriend despite a lack of trying. This is a different, but also one apparently that could involve violence. You co-authored a report about incel violence and how to respond to it. We are going to be talking about the case of Trey Genko from Hillsboro. How frequent are these violent examples of incels?
Yeah, of course, when you look at kind of the scope of, you know, extremist activity and hate crime reporting over the past 5-6 years, it is important to contextualize and say these cases are limited. And I would say a large part of that is the result of, you know, the good and timely work of law enforcement, like we saw in the case of Genko. What I will say is that I think one of the really important long-term points to take away from the violence that is emanating from individuals aligned with this ideology is that it's kind of self-reinforcing in the sense that, as we saw in the Genko case, and I'm happy to kind of dive into that in a bit, but he took kind of this direct, very personal inspiration from an individual who committed a very similar offense as he was alleged to have been planning to commit a number of years ago in California. And in that specific instance, that individual wrote a manifesto, which again became this kind of you know, required reading for individuals in these incel spaces and something that they look to as you know, not just inspiration, but as kind of this larger than life kind of a martyr, for lack of a better term. And you see that a lot, not just in the incel space, but in white supremacist and in these kind of accelerationist neo-Nazi spaces, is this deification of these individuals as saints. And you see this in many cases, whether it's Brenton Tarrant, whether it's Dylann Roof, or whether it's, again, in the case of Trey Genko, allegedly, he seemed to take a lot of inspiration from Elliot Rodger, who is the individual who committed a mass shooting in California in 2014. And so the concern is that you continue to see individuals take direct inspiration from previous mass shooters and previous acts of targeted violence, like we saw in the Elliot Rodger case.
We're talking with John Lewis, a research fellow in the Program on Extremism at George Washington University. Let's talk about Trey Genko, or Trace Genko. We've heard varied pronunciations. He's a 21-year-old. He's from Hillsboro, and he was charged by a federal grand jury of attempting to conduct a mass shooting of women and illegally possessing a machine gun. What do we know about this guy?
Yeah, again, I think it's just, you know, important to clarify at the top that, again, you know, everything is an allegation. He is obviously innocent until proven guilty. But as laid out in the indictment by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, he is alleged to have plotted this, you know, really, really detailed mass shooting that was, you know, meant to take place, you know, in Ohio at this university, where he had kind of seemed to fantasize about, you know, getting revenge on the individuals who he felt wronged him in some way. And again, as they lay out, you know, he allegedly bought a, you know, a hoodie with the word revenge on it. He bought a Bowie knife and a skull face mask, as well as when he was arrested, he was in possession of several rifles, including, I believe, at least two that had been converted to fire fully automatic.
According to reporting from WSYX, in January of 2020, the Department of Justice said Genco allegedly wrote a document entitled Isolated that he described as the writings of the deluded and homicidal. Genco signed the document, quote, your hopeful friend and murderer. Court documents said Genco conducted surveillance at an Ohio university in January of 2020. That same day, he allegedly searched online for topics, including, quote, how to plan a shooting crime, and, quote, does preparing for a crime become attempt? And part of that report from WSYX, John, seems to be corroborated by some of the positions that you take in the report that you co-authored with Jacob Ware about incels and violence. And it includes the idea that incels have, quote, followed the evolution in terrorist attacks perfected by the Islamic State. Rather than seek out well-defended hard targets or areas of political importance, today's violent extremists instead attacked soft targets where defenses are limited, if not non-existent. Could you talk a little bit about that, of what you wrote in the context of Trey Genco?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the Genco case, as alleged, is a, you know, another really important example of this trend, right? In that what we saw with a lot of Islamic State attacks is they weren't necessarily going for a hardened target. They were targeting, you know, a university or, you know, some very public space that, you know, just realistically, you know, is not going to be prepared for that kind of incident. And unfortunately, you're seeing that all too often in cases by male supremacists or by misogynist incels. There was the Toronto van attack several years ago, just on a public street. There was a case in New Jersey, I believe about a year ago, where a men's rights activist had gone to a female judge's home. And when her husband and son answered the door, both of them were shot. And again, it's this challenge where, you know, these individuals are seemingly well aware of, you know, procedures and defenses in, you know, some of these hardened areas. And instead of going for those, they are, you know, going for a place like a university, which, again, even though, you know, there has been a rise in kind of the procedures and planning to defend something like that, you know, given, again, the alleged preparation that he took, including surveillance by, you know, having multiple, you know, semi or fully automatic rifles, you know, I think this does speak to the seriousness of this threat.
Genco was stopped before serious violence took place, but in the trunk of his vehicle, investigators found a firearm with a bump stock attached. They found several loaded magazines. They found body armor and boxes of ammunition. And inside that house of his, they found a 9mm semi-automatic pistol. And he's also someone who trained in the military at Fort Benning, Georgia, apparently from August through December of 2019. So he sounds like somebody who has the skill level to cause some serious problems. When we think about the way investigators respond, this is something you explore in your paper as well. Are all of these incels created equally? This guy, and again, he's only facing allegations right now. He's indicted, but are they all created equally here?
No, and again, I think it is important to recognize that there is a broad, you know, community here of individuals who have not been accused of trying to engage in some kind of violence. But I think the important point is that this kind of broader mainstreaming of the incel ideology, the misogynist incel, you know, male supremacist points, which are, again, like really, really rooted heavily in this dehumanization of women and entitlement of men. And what you see is kind of this snowballing effect, right? Like in the Genco case, he was alleged to have planned to commit this attack on May 23rd, which is the date that Elliot Rodger committed his attack. He wrote a manifesto that, again, just given the top level information that came through in the indictment, seems to track very, very consistently with the themes and the narratives of Elliot Rodger's manifesto. And I think what you see is this continued push. And again, it's not just in the incel space, but in these other, you know, very online anti-government white supremacist spaces, is this almost gamification of the violence. And I think he kind of alludes to that in the indictment, where you kind of see him talking about, you know, how many is he going to be able to kill? And, you know, what is the number? Is it going to be 3,000 people? Will it be more? You know, I think what you see is this really concerning trend where, you know, individuals in these online spaces just G each other up, you know, to get to the point where they want to go out and beat the next high score of, you know, the previous mass shooter who, you know, conducted something like this.
When we think about, for example, the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, we know that there was some surveillance of some online messages. But when we think about terrorism, we know that there are very specialized agencies at the federal level that engage in counterterrorism. It's not necessarily your local police department. Based on what you know about the incel community and the potential for danger that they might pose, which level of law enforcement, is it federal, local, is best to surveil it if necessary?
Yeah, I think just given the general facts of this case and others, I think the federal level is the natural place, given their hate crime statutes, and given, again, like the charges in similar cases largely boiled down to either individuals committing interstate threats online or violating some kind of federal firearms statute. And in this case, you saw both hate crimes and some kind of firearm statutes that Genco is alleged to have broken. And I think that, again, at the federal level, given the fact that, again, the this is not some group of guys who are meeting up in the woods to conduct basic training or something like that, that you would have, you know, a local level or state level kind of surveillance. This is, again, largely happening online, largely happening in spaces, again, that are extraordinarily public, like Twitter, like Facebook. I think it kind of gets to this problem of where is the line in what kind of content social media platforms are willing to continue to house on their sites. And it really gets to the core of this issue in, I think, what myself and others have kind of talked about as borderline content. And that's the challenge, right? Is you have a lot of individuals who are on these mainstream platforms who aren't saying this explicit kind of rhetoric like you see in the Genco indictment of what he was saying privately in notes to himself or something else. What you're seeing is this kind of watered down, kind of tiptoeing around the kind of darker edges of misogynistic inceldom and kind of trying to get people into these spaces, recruit others into these spaces where they can then see, oh, here's the full extent of, you know, a lot of these male supremacist beliefs. And it's, again, I fully recognize that it is a slippery slope, but the reality is that a lot of these social media platforms do not have any kind of First Amendment obligations to continue to allow the kind of rhetoric and content that propagates these very dangerous, clearly, ideologies on their platforms.
Well, I guess in the spirit of see something, say something of law enforcement, which asks for the, you know, the community and family members to inform, are there attributes of potential incels that either people who share a household with them should recognize as signs?
Yeah, again, I think I just, you know, to be very careful in that there is, again, there is nothing illegal about holding views in the United States that many may feel are, you know, undesirable in some way, shape, or form. I think that what you have seen is in this mainstreaming of male supremacy, a lot of these, you know, very innocuous things, you know, whether it's, you know, just basic misogyny, whether it's xenophobia, whether it's racism, a lot of these kind of flashpoints, you know, in these kind of broad public debates, I think are really important to keep an eye on. And I think that it, getting back to your previous question, it does kind of speak to the challenge of addressing something like this. We've for a long time seen a counterterrorism apparatus that is, very well constructed to address these very orderly, hierarchical foreign terrorist networks. And what we've seen, from January 6th and even beforehand, is a challenge in the domestic space to kind of fit these, again, admittedly, very weird, very hard to kind of parse out, very online. They use a lot of memes. They talk in coded language. It's very hard to parse out the exact kind of fault lines in a lot of these ideologies and a lot of these movements. And I think that, incels and especially, the kind of misogynist incels that take steps to engage in violence, it's very difficult to kind of get a handle on who they are and that movement towards violence.
John Lewis is a research fellow in the program on extremism at George Washington University. John, thank you so much for sharing some of these thoughts with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.